All right. Good morning, everybody. I call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 19, 2017, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Our partner, Marty Chi, agreed to go help out his old friends at FedEx this week, so he won't be with us this week as he helps out Santa Claus in getting all the packages where they're supposed to go. So it'll be just Loris and I today. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for anybody to comment on items on this agenda, or as our tradition is, if you've got something else you want to comment on, come on up. Nancy. Please start by introducing yourself, Nancy.
Nancy knows me.
Nancy Miller, 23584 600th Avenue. You know that best paved road in the county?
It is.
No, baby. Okay, I want to talk about the DOT.
Are you able to stay long, and you're welcome to talk about it now, are you able to stay long enough to talk about it as we get to it on the agenda?
Sure.
Okay, let's do that. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? You have anything else?
Would you say wait on this?
Or go. You don't
want. I'm going to go. Okay. I'm going to read this rather than talking extemporaneously. I read that letter you sent to the DOT regarding the planned improvements to US 30. In fact, I read it multiple times. One, I briefly went to their latest meeting, which was, as usual, another dog and pony show with maps laid out on tables, DOT personnel present, but with no specific answers to anyone's questions. The atmosphere was, here is what we are going to do, whether you like it or not. The write-up for the meeting said, the purpose of the project is to improve the level of safety and to improve traffic operations. They listed traffic volumes for 1992 and 2015 and a projection for 2040. What they did not list is traffic accidents during those years and a projection of accidents for 2040. Certainly that information would be necessary to validate the purpose of improve the level of safety. By the way, I question the formula for the 2040 projection. It seems the DOT did not tell you, the Story County Supervisors, the whole truth. They told you nothing was planned east of 580, and now the plan is significantly more encompassing. Turning US 30 into an interstate is their ultimate goal, with no concern for the businesses and residents along US 30. The DOT certainly does not care about the massive expense they will inflict upon the county for construction and maintenance. This is no different than when we were working the details for 600th Avenue. Repeatedly, we've heard them say, that's a top priority for us, which we know is political speech for when we get around to it. I was told by the head of the DOT that they, the DOT, do not make the decisions regarding which projects get approval. The commissioners make the decisions. The DOT did nothing until they knew the commissioners had been contacted and were then forced to declare the when so our county could plan accordingly. The commissioners are in charge of what, when, where, and how much will be spent. Certainly a valid question is what projects must be sidelined to pursue this project to turn US 30 into an interstate. Neither the county or the state has unlimited funds. Have you contacted the commissioners? I strongly suggest you do that precisely. Only then will you have the precise answers you are looking for. I found them to be quite responsive and expect you will too. Oh, by the way, I was going to give you the example of the bully on the playground who promises to leave you alone yet has his fingers crossed behind his back and then proceeds to push you to the ground. Oh, but I chose not to say that.
Yeah, I completely chose not to say that. So I think it's important to note that that Nancy has had regular communication with the commissioners of the DOT. In fact, you attended a DOT commissioners division meeting.
Excuse me, I organized the meeting we had.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to point out for everybody that you've been really active in this. I want to make sure you understand, Nancy, we've not sent anything to the DOT regarding this yet. That's going to be our conversation later in the meeting is this draft letter that Jerry's drafted for and Darren and others have drafted for us to consider and really appreciate your concerns.
I don't think that letter is strong enough.
I appreciate that. Okay. Anybody else wishing to comment in public comment number one? Okay. Next item on the agenda, really a bittersweet moment, opportunity to thank Cal Pearson for his 27 years of service here in Story County, but it also underscores for us that Cal's time with us here in Story County, in Story County government, is ending. And so I'll just say this. I was part of the Board of Supervisors that was wise enough to name Cal our director a few years ago. And in every way, Story County facilities are better today than they were when Cal took the helm. In fact, when you look around just this building's 50 years old. I think anybody would be hard-pressed to find a 50-year-old public building in as good a shape as this. And that is true facility by facility, item by item that our facilities department handles. As the leader of that organization, Cal is the guy who's made that happen. We are going to miss you. Story County is going to miss you. We're really, really fortunate that we've hired somebody great to replace you, but that does not take away from how much you're going to be missed. And Cal, how much I hope you know your years of service have been appreciated. So thank you so much. Your opportunity, I know you're not much of a speaker, but this is your opportunity to say whatever you want to say. Nothing?
Not much for words. Thank you for what you said, though, Rick.
Absolutely. Doris, anything you want to add?
Cal, I want to give a comment. I don't want to sit here as a supervisor, but I want to comment about all the years I've come and been involved with the county as a citizen, okay? And I've always appreciated the way that the staff has taken care of the outside of the various buildings that I've gone into, the attention that's paid to safety. And so becoming a supervisor, I've just become much more aware of how much you do behind the scenes. But I want you to know that I appreciated you and your staff a long time ago. I know it's going to continue, but thank you very much for that as a citizen.
Well said. So there's no way we can do enough to appropriately thank Cal for his years. But as a small token of our appreciation, we have this plaque, and it says, Calvin J. Pearson, in appreciation of 27 years of leadership, dedication, and service to the citizens of Story County. Photo opportunity. Come on up, Cal. And now's a good time for everybody to applaud.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have fun. Thank you.
You
take
that. Hold the flag up. Is that what you're doing?
No, no.
All right, everybody set? Congratulations.
We'll see you later today.
Yes. All right, two agency reports. First, we got our emergency management quarterly report from Keith Morgan. Morning, Keith.
Good morning. Thanks for this opportunity to talk to you. I'd like to begin talking about our responses and common thread for those responses during this period, which was hazmat. There were three hazmat events in Story County, two of which occurred in the unincorporated areas. Given the significant transportation of farm chemicals on our roads, the high traffic volumes we have on I-35 and Highway 30, and significant rail traffic, the risk to the county of a hazmat situation is moderate. A large-scale hazmat can be a complex event that's costly in terms of both the response and the recovery. A recent hazmat event in Story County brought to my attention that the county's ordinance is designed to recoup costs for the cleanup of a hazmat spill, but I'm not sure it would cover recouping the cost of an actual response to a hazmat event should the spiller resist to pay. I'd like to first off recommend that the county review its code to ensure that it will allow the county to pursue recovery of costs associated with a response to a hazmat situation. For instance, if Des Moines Hazmat comes on up here, we will receive, there will be a cost associated with that. With it, this leads to a major planning effort here in Story County, and it's being spearheaded through the Emergency Management Agency on behalf of the local Emergency Planning Committee. Through the work of the hard work of my deputy, the LAPC secured a grant to have a contractor conduct a hazardous materials commodity flow study. Through this study, the emergency response community should gain a better understanding of the type and quantity of hazardous material flowing through Story County. The last time a study like this was done was in 2001, so we anticipate there's going to be significant changes to this information. This information will help my office understand the risk we face due to these activities and allow us to coordinate better planning, training, exercises, and procurement of the resources to reduce this risk. Yesterday, we had the initial meeting with the contractor who will be facilitating the revision of the hazard mitigation plan. This plan is important to Story County as it should help us develop strategies to reduce our risks to natural and man-made disasters. Also, by having a FEMA-approved plan, jurisdictions become eligible for hazard mitigation grants to reduce their risk to disasters. Each jurisdiction needs to identify who will represent them at three meetings where we evaluate the risk and also develop mitigation strategies. Story County has already done some great work when it comes to reducing risk, such as the construction of the storm shelter at Hickory Grove to help protect campers. And I look forward to working with your representative during this planning effort. I encourage all Story County departments to look at ways we can do things smarter on the front end to protect lives and property. I hope you notice our efforts to conduct a training, exercise, and planning workshop in my report. This project ties directly to our strategic plan to facilitate collaboration between all the entities involved in disaster preparedness, response, and recovery. Through a TEPW, we can establish a roadmap that maximizes our ability to enhance our capabilities by focusing on activities that reduce our risk the most and ensure we get the right players together to improve our interoperability. We sent out an email requesting organizations provide us names of representatives to the TEPW. At this time, we have responses from businesses, two school districts, Iowa State University, and the USDA facility, but only one emergency response agency. We're going to continue to push for this, and I wait to see who your representative from Story County, the Sheriff's Office, will be. But we look forward to hearing from you and collaborating with your representative when we get that name. Our office received the final shipment of materials needed to provide the over-the-air television to designated areas within this building. We have started to coordinate with facilities to install the wiring within the building. When the project is completed, we will have the ability to maintain situational awareness through television media for ongoing events that impact us either locally or nationally. And we also continue to work with Iowa State Emergency Management to transfer our backup EOC from the Community Services Building to their building. Emergency Management greatly appreciates the support we've received from the Board of Supervisors with respect to housing the backup EOC at Community Services. We also appreciate the support from our program from Iowa State, which is demonstrated by them allowing us to transfer our backup EOC to their facility, which will have better capacity to support us. This will hopefully be a win-win situation, as I know Story County will benefit through the freeing up of critical space for the Story County Continuity of Operations Plan. In conclusion, I'd like to wrap up by complimenting the Board of Supervisors and Story County on their proactive approach to emergency preparedness, response, and recovery. Your administration is the only one that I am aware of that has worked to tackle a debris management problem before disaster strikes. You not only put together a COOP-COG plan, you're working to move the plan from being a document on the shelf to a true capability through your support of training on this plan. I look forward to partnering with you in the future to drive down risks to our citizens and also in the future to be ready to respond when called upon. With that, I'd open it up to any questions you might have.
Sure. So, Pete, I'd ask you to back up to assigning somebody from Board of Supervisors or the Sheriff's Office to the TEPW. Help us. Help us figure out what our role is in that. So I've viewed that as the most appropriate is somebody from our first responders, from our sheriff's office. But talk us through that. What makes the most sense?
It can actually be from both sides. I'm encouraging jurisdictions to both have folks from their first responders because they're the ones that are going to be doing the tactical events. The other part of that, though, is that jurisdiction, that next layer up, the equivalent of our emergency operations center downstairs is something that all the jurisdictions. And again, you guys are working towards that with your COOP-COG plan. I would like to work any of your future activities with the training part of that COOP-COG into our overall plan so that we can work it into our resources and our capabilities and also see if there are other agencies that might want to come and see what you're doing during that training, participate in that training, maybe linkages out to other agencies during that training. So, yeah, I could see someone from the sheriff's office, but I could also see someone a little bit higher up from your administration to coordinate with all the departments on that.
And go ahead, Laura.
I think we may be having the same question. So are you thinking from an administration standpoint or a policymaking standpoint?
For what we encourage is the person that comes to our TEPW be familiar with policies, be familiar with previous exercises and actual events that have occurred, and be empowered enough to be able to speak to, yes, we would like to sign up to this event or that event, fully understanding that they are going to have to go back and get final approval. But we don't want the person to, every time we ask a question, do you want to do this, have them have to say, wait a second, I've got to call somebody else and come back and call somebody else, because that just takes up too much time. So again, somebody familiar with your operations on a holistic view, and also somebody empowered to be able to put together an 80% product that we then work with.
But you're not necessarily looking for a jurisdictional executive. You're looking more for a staff, a high-level staff member under the jurisdictional executive.
Correct.
And without giving that person approval to set those meetings themselves, et cetera, to take on that level without having come back to us. So you're looking for us to grant that forward to say, yeah, well, we'd like to attend this meeting. I will be there.
Mm-hmm.
That type of person, because any expenditure of money would need to come back to us, any change in policy would need to.
Especially within the board with elected officials and everything, fully understand that there's going to have to be coordination and negotiation with the other departments. I would look for that person to be proactive, to look at what your objectives are for your organization in the future to move to being better equipped for disaster response, to bring that kind of objective and to advocate and push within the TEPW to try and get those objectives met.
Is it one position we're talking about, or is it one position from the administrative policymaking side and one position from the sheriff's office, both?
I would see two separate ones, because the sheriff's office goes down one more level into much more of the tactical, but then again, with their reach across all of these different jurisdictions, it'll be very important for us to have somebody there talking on their behalf.
Okay. So then, Morris, I'd suggest that we put this on our January 2nd agenda as part of our organizational meeting, just to figure out having something like this.
I agree.
You mentioned why that emergency management is putting wiring into this building in order to have video capabilities throughout this building. Can you talk a little about your work with Alyssa Wignall in identifying money in this year's budget to equip what we're classifying as our Board of Supervisors response room?
Sure. What we have done, again, another great collaborative effort. Our office definitely needed over the year, especially the redundancy of not relying on some other agency to provide us that situational awareness that you gain through watching TV media. At that point, we also looked at, well, with our PIO operations, public information operations, that will be occurring up here in the Board of Supervisors room, we looked at it as this is a perfect time for us to continue the process and get the signal up to both up here, the Board of Supervisors conference room, and down the assessor's room so that we have two areas that we can operate from. We are looking, that room for the public information officers needs to be ready to be up and going immediately. So I'm coordinating with Melissa to identify the ability first to watch the three major networks, click, turn it on, and when the public information officer is in there, to gain that situational awareness on what's going on. So at this time, we've got all the equipment to get it up to that room. We just need to work with the board to get the mounts and the monitors to allow them to do that.
And we actually have money in this year, the FY18 budget, to equip that room.
That will greatly enhance our capability. It was feedback from our EOC exercise that they felt like they were in the dark up here because we didn't have that kind of connectivity.
Mm-hmm. Good questions.
I had a question that you mentioned about updating the active shooter standard operating guide.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm not aware of that guide. Is that something that we would be aware of, or is this really more directed toward the responders?
It is primarily directed towards the responders, the culmination of probably 2 years' worth of work and enhancement on it. We have focused, again, emergency management focuses on interjurisdictional and interdisciplinary activities. Our sheriff's office has got to go across multiple districts with multiple first responders, fire, and EMS. And we found this to be a point where we needed to bring people together so that we can have very general ideas. Essentially what we've done is we've established priorities for our law enforcement, fire, and emergency medical through the cycle of if we should incur an active shooter situation. And those priorities change as time goes along. It's not prescriptive because of the fluid environment that they might run into. But it establishes priorities, and we have twice run through those activities thanks to the jail staff, which does this kind of training annually. We have brought together the first responders to try and talk about how will all of this mesh together. So it's developed. It's a living document. Again, not is focused much more outside of Ames and Iowa State because they have the capacity that those first steps will occur within their consolidated organization.
And my final question is, I was lucky enough to be able to attend the last local emergency response.
LAPC.
LAPC, which is a group of responders and and people from the business communities and other nonprofits that would respond in the result of a disaster if they had one, like at Monsanto or something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman spoke from Safeguard, Iowa.
Yes.
It was a wonderful speaker. They are a couple of individuals as a nonprofit who go out and find the types of supplies from the business community that are needed in a disaster. For example, getting Heidi to donate water during a fire, that type of thing. Okay. It came up during that discussion that you still were having some difficulty making a contact to get to talk to the Ames Chamber and AEBC. And I know a couple members of the team spoke up and said that they had contact. I had mentioned that you sat on the executive board of the AEBC in a non-voting role, but still had a pretty good contact right here. Was there any pursuing of that?
Yes, we've made some progress. Drew Camp, who used to work closely with us, when I went to the discussions on the budget, I hit him up on that.
Okay.
And we've got a couple of days in January that I forwarded down to Safeguard Iowa, which is a great organization. And it's more than just pulling from businesses and such during a disaster. It's also pushing information to allow them to be better prepared should a disaster strike. So we've got that meeting will hopefully be established sometime in January, and we are looking to get in there and let the local businesses know about this resource and also to get them better integrated into our overall response, because it's not just a response by government or just the citizens. It's got to be a three-way response.
Thank you.
While it's not strictly within your purview, you've been involved every step of the way. Can you give us a two-minute update on the consultant's report to E911 on the first responder radio system, where that stands, and what we might see going forward from that, from your perspective?
From my perspective, they did an initial evaluation of what our needs are going to be. And there, to me, there was nothing surprising that, came out of that. They highlighted that there are two well-established systems here within the state, and we are right at that seam between the two different systems that they did. They demonstrated coverage and some of the effort that's going to have to be taken by us collectively within Story County to ensure that we have the coverage that we need. The cost is going to be significant. We need to now move forward from that, and jurisdictions now need to start looking at their portion of that cost. It will be a heavy cost to all of the jurisdictions around here when in terms of replacing radios, because our current radios that we have right now, the vast majority of them will not be usable. So this is something that's not going to get better with time. I hope that we can figure out what our timelines are and press forward with this and keep moving on it, because communications is one of those things that is highlighted in every after-action report that I've seen, both from exercises and real-world events, as a critical component.
Yeah, and just to underscore that, the initial estimate countywide, all jurisdictions, is about $8 million for Story County. So it is a substantial number that's going to have to be figured out in order to get where we need to go. Sure, appreciate you sitting in on all. Like I said, this is not strictly under your purview, but appreciate you sitting in on all of those. Laura, anything additional for Keith?
Nothing except thank you once again for managing this so well. I know you report to a different commission that, you know, it's not under Story County, but thank you.
Well, Story County in total, not talking about Story County government,
right,
but Story County total is lucky to have both Keith and Melissa. The job you guys do, we just love when we don't need you, but we're going to be really, really thankful when that time comes that we do. Well, every time it comes that we do, if there's something major that comes, the work that you guys have put in to get us ready is greatly appreciated.
Hopefully you'll be able to keep us down in the basement.
Thank you. Next is the report from Department of Human Services. Darren Thompson and Jackie Rogers are here today. So Darren and I used to serve on DCAT together, and we see each other pretty regularly, and now it feels like it's been forever, Darren, since I've seen you.
It has. It's been about a year now since the last time. We were actually face-to-face in front of the board, so we always appreciate the opportunity of being able to just share some of the highlights. This ends up being a good time of the year for us, just simply because a lot of the financials are closing out, and as we talk about fiscal year 19, we've actually just closed all of our federal fiscal year 17 books out just recently, and so it provides us with some numbers to be able to share with us. And then so Jackie Rogers is with me here today, and the hope is that she'll be an asset for you as well, somebody that you can talk to as our new income maintenance supervisor, and somebody that Marty will hopefully get to know as well as part of the DCAT and CPPC teams.
Outstanding.
I'm not going to read the report to you. Certainly, there is a lot of good information in here. You can see that our staff numbers are staying very steady. We also have an intern as well as a volunteer that works out of the office on a consistent basis helping us out. You can see that the decategorization report for the annual has been submitted and completed, and that's attached to the documents as well and is available online, which is fantastic. Thank you, Shelley, for getting all that stuff done for us. Appreciate that. And then just real quickly with our social workers, they continue to have a very high caseload. That caseload is always a steady number. And the work that we're doing with Story County Attorney's Office is just wonderful. And we truly appreciate the great work that they're doing in helping us out with these families and the struggles that they're going through. So a lot of times we forget about the great relationship that we have because it has been so steady and so strong. We just want to publicly recognize the fact that the Story County Attorney's Office has been truly an asset to us. So we are grateful for all that they do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of struggles with, unfortunately, a lot of drug use and abuse that has been happening on a consistent basis. And we continue to see that as one of our primary concerns that we have. So going back to the last page in the report, which is public assistance, this is where we share some of the numbers that the team is responsible for out of the office in Ames. And you can look through and you can recognize that food assistance was approximately $7.6 million and has kind of flatlined over the years and gone down a little bit. As you'll notice, all of these numbers have gone down, which is important to note. You can go all the way back to approximately 2008, 2009, when we had similar numbers. And, of course, that was prior to the bubble with regards to all of the housing and all the concerns that came out of that. So we pretty much follow that same trend as nationally, and those numbers are indicated here. Overall for the county, it's been approximately $57.6 million have been brought in by the staff that work out of the office for different things such as food assistance, the family investment, and the Medicaid Title 19 is the largest one there. So we continue to see a regular slight downward trend. That downward trend follows regularly with the amount of individuals that are employed on a full-time and even part-time basis.
And is that true for the Medicaid dollars? So I completely get where that's true for the food assistance and actually feel good when I see that number bending back down. But talk to me about the Medicaid, and should I be seeing the same thing there, or is that other factors?
No, you should be seeing that as well for the Medicaid. And I have a report that goes back to 2008, and I can just quickly give you kind of some of that. So when you look back for the Medicaid Title 19, in 2008 we were at $41.8 million in Story County, and then it started trending up, and at $49.3 million in 2010, and then we took a huge jump as we get to the Affordable Care Act, whenever it was fully implemented, in the 14-15 time period at $74.4 million. Now we're trending back down as individuals, of course, get the full-time employment and are covered under an insurance policy of some kind or are back in full-time employment that allows for even partial coverage. Any of these options show that we have this downward trend in that category, as well as some of the things that have been done locally as well with the MCOs and the state moving to that process as a whole. That has also caused this number to go down as well.
But so if I were to look at this all the way back, 2008, 2009, 2010, and compare that to 2017, we got a little upward trend. We just had a huge bubble in between 10 and 17 that makes it appear that we're dropping way, way back down.
That is correct.
Okay.
And that is our assessment of the situation and where the numbers are statewide. If you look at statewide, and that's something interesting to take into account, it is billions of dollars. Take just the 15-county area, which we represent about 26% of the state in the Des Moines service area. So 15 counties from basically Story County all the way down to the Missouri border is the area that we roughly cover. We are the largest service area in the state, and therefore representing that 26%, this year we were at $743 million for Medicaid alone. Well over $1 billion total for everything. But then you go back to 2015, we were well over $1 billion just for 26% of the state. So you start aggregating that out to the entire state, and you're talking about a multi-billion dollar cost or funds that come in both federally and state matched dollars for this purpose alone.
You helped me a lot. And for everybody, so these are the kind of conversations Darren and I used to have regularly at DCAT, and I find myself kind of missing them. I enjoy these kind of things.
I'm glad you do, because I do as well.
Laura, any questions?
No, because we talked about the numbers. I kind of warned him in the elevator. I came up to him and said, I only have to know the numbers. So you explained why the differences, what kind of the trend has been. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
Absolutely. Next is consideration of minutes from 12-12-17.
I would move as presented.
And I'll second. Any notations or corrections, Laura?
None.
Laura Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, Laura.
I would move as presented to us.
And I'll second. Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda.
I would move as presented.
And I'll second. Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes as presented. No public hearing items today. So additional items, discussion and consideration of Story County password policy after the 7-day review. Barb Steinbeck. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
All right, so we dealt with this a week ago. Good morning. Any comments? Any employees to reach out on this?
There was one comment that I received yesterday, and it questioned the length of the password refresh and then also the amount of time for the screensaver to kick in. They felt that this might impact the ability to serve the customer. I would recommend that we keep the length of the password renewal and the screensaver as listed, simply because those aren't even the strictest industry standards, and I don't think security is going to be convenient. It's something we all have to just bite the bullet and do. Realistically, every time you leave your computer, you should control alt delete and kick in the screensaver. So, and the interval of time it takes for the screensaver to kick in is based on inactivity. So if you're helping a customer and typing on the keyboard, it won't kick in. And I guess I'm just asking for the board's opinion.
Well, I'm going to assume that the comments came from our areas that do a lot of high-volume customer service, probably shorter transactions, maybe. But, okay, so I'm trying to think about that if I'm putting myself in their shoes, okay? The 60 days for the change on the passwords, while, yes, inconvenient.
Let's be careful that we're not sharing too much information. So we got two documents here. We got a document that's available for the public and one that's not.
Okay.
So be a little more vague.
That's hard for me.
Okay. I know.
The time period I'm comfortable with. Okay. The walking away from the screen before it shuts down and you have to sign in, that's what we're talking about the second issue being, right? Correct? Before the automatic, push your password back in.
The screensaver kicks in after several minutes of inactivity.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But realistically, every time we leave our computer, we should control alt delete and kick in the screensaver, because we may be gone 5 minutes, we may be gone a half hour, we don't know. And after a certain period of time, the screensaver will kick in, but there is time where it's not kicked in. So that would be my recommendation.
I mean, we're talking about the extra time for somebody to put in their password.
Exactly.
If they spend enough time. And I can see where that could be annoying, and it means an extra few seconds in dealing with them. I just tend to come down with Barb that security is not always convenient. Very rarely is security convenient.
And I'm also thinking that the most likely, in my mind, department that might have to deal with this frequently also has screens pretty accessible to the public. Mm-hmm. If they walk away from the screen, if an employee walks away from the screen.
Possibly, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything that you'd like to add, Barb?
No, I think it speaks for itself. There was a comment that, you know, we put the part that was recused, we put that on the intranet. Some people said they did not have access to the intranet. So I reached out, you know, if you still can't get in, please let us know, and we'd be sure to help you. So. Mm-hmm. That's all.
I would move that we approve the password policy as presented to us today.
Perfect. And I'll second it and just underscore that this is
getting a prompt here.
Yeah, I was going to underscore
after that. The 7-day review.
Yeah, and so a motion and a second, and if it passes right here, it will be in effect. Further conversation. Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The password policy passes as presented, noting that we appreciate the comments, and we have gone through the 7-day review, so it is now enacted. Thanks, Barb.
Wonderful. Thank you, Board.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and consideration of the Board of Supervisors' request of other boards and commissions to audio record their meetings for placement on the county website. Laura Olson.
Okay. This has been something that I've noted for a long time, but with the website refresh that's coming and hopefully April being coming live, that this might be a time to go ahead and look at us having more consistency in having audio available right after the fact of a meeting for all of the boards and commissions about who we actually post and host their minutes and host their host other information for them. We only have three entities, all of which have a separate board or commission that they report through, who have not been posting their audio. And I reached out, called to find out, you know, what the problems were, and it turned out emergency management was recording their audio, but they had at one time been told that there was not enough storage space on the server, so they weren't posting it. Then I reached out, and I talked in each case to the employee who's directly responsible for the minutes and the recordings to start with, just to find out the background here. And then I discovered the Conservation Board used to record, but their recorder had broken about a year or so ago, so they never got ahead and replaced it. And then so then it turned out Veterans Administration was the one that didn't appear to either be having been recording or posting. And at that point then, since we were headed into the budget, I thought this would be under our purvey because we'd be purchasing them for the two entities. That, you know, so I turned it in as a budget request to Alyssa, thinking it would come out of our budget. Well, then I got information back that actually it would be assessed to the department, at which point I sent an email out to the supervisors of the departments, their supervisors, Alyssa, Barb Steinbeck, anybody I could think of who might be involved in this in some way, and explained the situation again. And Alyssa, I had misunderstood that Alyssa, when she came back to me and said it would go through their department budgets, I thought we would be putting it on the budget. So I sent out the first email explaining the request, explaining the first official step was to bring it here for the board to make the request or not, and then go to their boards and commissions because they get the decision about what to do. And I had looked at pricing out because that was part of back to when we as the Board of Supervisors were submitting our budget request to Alyssa. And then Alyssa got back with me right away and said, oh, no, it's not in your budgets, because I thought it would be added. So I sent back another email saying, oh, no, it's not in your budget yet. We would discuss this at the budget table if their boards and commissions were interested in participating. And the key thing here for me is I believe that transparency is available and detail is available immediately with the audio, because in these three situations, the minutes don't go on as rapidly as they do for our Board of Supervisor, right? I mean, we approve last week's minutes at this meeting, and then they're put on right away. So for the public, we have a short turnaround gap, but we still provide audio and video should they want to know what happens immediately at this meeting. Also, the same goes for, I believe, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we've got Board of Adjustments, some other ones that meet here. But technology is a little more delayed, obviously, for these boards and commissions that meet in different places. So this would be, and you could go 30 days between meetings with the public not having access to the meeting, the minutes from the previous meeting. So I went ahead and I'm proposing this, and the website refresh seems like the perfect time to go ahead and do this, because we're not talking about it coming up until April, which gives plenty of time for transition.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you very much. So I'll say this. So when I joined the Board of Supervisors, first of all, there was no such thing as video in Board of Supervisors meetings.
The audio was not posted to the website. If you wanted the audio, you had to come in and get a burnt CD to get it. So I've been completely committed to the Board of Supervisors increasing and enhancing our full transparency and the availability of the public. You and I, Laura, should come as no shock to anybody who's been watching this. We philosophically have a little different vision of what our role is when it comes to our different boards and commissions. So I believe fully that the Board of Supervisors, so we're the body that's empowered to put people on those boards and commissions that you're mentioning, right? We appoint Veterans Affairs. We don't appoint Emergency Management, but we do appoint Conservation. I believe we should absolutely demand that every one of our boards and commissions follow state law. I think we should absolutely expect every one of our boards, and they all do, by the way, they all do currently. I think we should absolutely expect that every one of our boards and commissions operate in a manner that allows them to best fulfill whatever mission is laid out for them by code, different items we put on. And in order to do that, I believe they ought to have some autonomy to set their structure as they deem it would work best for them, as long as it meets state law. So two of the three that you mentioned that Emergency Management already records their meetings and may, in fact, in the future, if there's space available, choose to put them up online.
Mm-hmm.
But both Veterans Affairs and Conservation have already taken this up after you started making your inquiries. And Veterans Affairs has voted to continue to operate as they operate and not add this. And Conservation voted to not put any money in the budget for recording and continue to operate as they operate. So it seems to me that this is a moot point.
Mm-hmm.
They took your inquiry as a request, and dealt with it.
Okay.
So I don't think there's anything left for us to do, because I don't believe that it's our purview to dictate to them, this is how you will conduct your meetings.
And I would like to point out in the last paragraph that there was no
sure.
attempt to dictate. This is an ask.
Absolutely.
Okay, and So I would like to, since I hear that there are a couple people here from Veterans Affairs, I see our executive director and hi, Terry. Could I hear what your reasoning is? You're not obligated, I believe, to explain it, but I'd be interested in hearing where this wouldn't be something you'd be interested in.
So, you guys come up if you want.
Yeah, like I said, You're not obligated.
All right, good morning.
Good morning, Brett. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Start by introducing yourself for us, Brett.
Brett McLean, I'm the director for Story County Veterans Affairs.
Mm-hmm. I'm Terry Greenfield, commissioner of Story County Veterans Affairs.
Well, let me start out with just to kind of clarify what we do at the commission, because I think Laura, you might be thinking that Erin Rewerts is responsible for the minutes.
Yeah.
And she's not.
Okay.
We have a super. We have a secretary of commission for our commission who does the minutes.
Okay.
So when you called and talked to Erin,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, she did good to do that part.
Okay, thank you. She can.
You bet.
Perfect.
And so after that phone call, we talked to the commission and mm-hmm. just left it up to them. I mean, what we do and what we have done since I've been here for 19 years, we haven't heard any complaints about the minutes, and they're posted online. So I don't know where this is coming from.
Well, this is
we haven't had any complaints.
Okay, well, this is coming from efforts, especially with the website refresh, to go ahead and have greater access for the public in a more timely fashion, access to information. Okay, so it wasn't directed toward Veterans Affairs or toward Conservation or toward Emergency Management from a complaint standpoint. It was an opportunity for us to take a look at the types of things on the website that people have noticed have been inconsistent. I have noticed that have been inconsistent. So
So that is an attempt also then to get information out for all members of the public, depending on their interests, to access information more. So that was the attempt on it.
Right.
This is from the standpoint of we're doing a website refresh, and this is the era in which we live in where more people access via the internet, and more people expect information in a more timely manner. We can argue that sometimes it's too timely and it ends up not being correct when you're talking about maybe our news cycle or something like that.
Right.
But certainly, so this was from my ongoing interest in seeing how much information can we get out in the variety of ways that people go ahead and access information about the county. That was what was the purpose was and everything.
When Aaron first told me about you guys' phone call, I checked the law and it hasn't changed. So we're following the letter of the law.
Yes, you are.
We're doing it. And Amy Rosenberg is our secretary. And so she's doing the minutes. She sends them to me. I send them out to the commission. Do we miss anything? And then we post them. So that's kind of what we're at.
The same week.
It would end, probably.
Okay, so you're actually doing an approval via an electronic meeting then, is what you're saying. Of the minutes.
No, you guys post a draft of your minutes, and then you come back and approve them at the next meeting.
Okay,
but you don't let the approval stand in the way of getting the draft.
Right. And well, our agenda is out there. I'll let Terry know.
I'm looking from the commissioner's point of view. There's subject matter that comes up that is not public matters, people's names and the things that they file for, that can't be in any record. I took the class that the county put on for information management, and we meet all the requirements for it.
Okay, asking here, you use those names in the meetings?
If
a member of the public came to one of those,
we couldn't do it then. We'd have to close the meeting to talk about those people. Because about HIPAA regulations and everything else that we require.
Right, but if there's nobody from the public, even though it's an openly posted meeting, you're getting the names and exchanging that information? What you're doing.
No, we're not. No, we're not we're not talking about any veterans by name.
Anything else you guys want to add on the thought of recording your meetings? As I understood it, the commission took action and said, no, you want to continue to operate the way you're currently operating.
Yes, we took a vote. Chairman called for a vote on it. It was unanimous that we would like to stay the way we are. Of course, if there's rules made that would require us to do, we'll follow those rules, of course.
So I just want to underscore, and I know that Loris feels this as well, and Loris, you can back me up. You guys do a great job. We're so appreciative of the work you do. Please don't take this conversation in any way as a reflection that anybody, and I'm counting you in this, that anybody is suggesting that you guys aren't doing anything appropriately. And I'd say the same thing is true for emergency management and conservation. Again, this is just a different... Loris and I have a different philosophy on lots of things. This is just another demonstration of that.
Yeah.
And this vote was taken prior to Russell Bauer being appointed, so it'd be just the four of you.
Yep.
Okay. I understand. Thank you for coming today to help the mind. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. So now, this is your item. What do you want to do with it?
Well, I can move, and it'll die for lack of a second, I suppose, but let's go ahead and carry on out free.
Okay.
I move that we, the Board of Supervisors, should ask the three agencies listed, to enact the same manner of recording audio and posting that is now being done by other boards and commissions.
And you're 100% right. I'm not going to second it because I don't believe it's the Board of Supervisors' role to try to dictate or mandate the way any of our appointed boards or commissions conduct business. We should just expect them to follow the law and do the business that we lay out for them. So that does die for lack of a second. Next item is discussion and consideration of proposed IDOT interchange project at Highway 30 and 580th Street. So Darren, Jerry, Deb, and I had a very brief meeting last week at some point and talked about this item and the reality that today is the deadline for the Board of Supervisors, for the public, to have any comments on the proposed plans. I suggested that Jerry and Darren work together to draft something to come before the board for us to discuss. So, Laura, you should take this letter that's in front of us as a draft. And, Jerry, I'm assuming that this all came from you with input from Darren.
Correct.
Okay.
So we just had a brief presentation. The DOT had their open house meeting on December 5 at the Campus Baptist Church to go over their proposed interchange at 580th Avenue and Highway 30. As Rick said, the public input comment deadline is today. That's why we put together some comments for the board. They're proposing to have a public hearing on this plan within a year and a half. They plan to have funding for this project in 2022, and they plan to construct it in 2023. Project cost is approximately $13.4 million. It includes approximately 5 existing driveways to be closed, access to Highway 30. It also includes closing Sandhill Trail, 580th Avenue, and then 590th Avenue to the east. Would also include on and off ramps for this interchange, as well as some frontage roads. We've got some photos of the proposed layout to show you. And there are no additional projects planned, as there were about a year and a half or longer ago, east of 590th Avenue. So this is the concept proposed layout that the DOT was proposing for the 580th Avenue area about a year and a half ago. This would be just east of Sandhill Trail, west of 580th Avenue.
And let's underscore right now, this is not the existing current proposal. This is the previous proposal.
Just trying to show you the comparison. And again, it was over a year and a half ago, and this was their preferred layout for the interchange. Businesses, Cornerstone Church, Crossroad Baptist Church, the IDOT on the north side of Highway 30, east of the Coal of Relief at I-35. On the south side there, Barnhart, Control Precision Ag, Royal Mini Storage, Service Master, and Wood of Construction are the businesses on the south side of Highway 30. To the east of the proposed interchange is Caramoli, Brown Supply, Story County Vet Center, or Vet Clinic. And then, of course, to the east of that at 590th Avenue is Vetters and the Ag Information Center. I'm not sure why that popped up, but thanks for taking care of that, Darren. So this was the proposed concept, interchange, on and off ramps, frontage road system. This would be like a brand new local road that they're proposing to extend westward and southerly. The red area represents a proposed bridge over Highway 30 and then the on and off ramps on either side.
And go back one.
Yep.
So I would just point out that original concept had no direct access to 580. You'd have to go all the way up to Lincoln Way to 590. You'd have to go all the way up to Lincoln Way and then come all the way down what is currently a gravel road with kind of a so I'm talking about 590th now, Jerry.
Okay.
Yeah, right there.
Okay.
In order to get to the businesses located, so we've got Vetter Equipment and Case IH located right there at Highway 30. In order to get there, you'd have to go all the way up to Lincoln Way. It's about a 4-mile trip, all said and done, if you were standing in front of it on Highway 30. So that's where it was.
That's what it was. This is the preferred concept interchange at 580th Avenue. It's orientated east of the existing orientation with Highway 30. The X's represents the proposed accesses that they would like to eliminate. Again, there's 5 driveways. It includes eliminating Sandhill Trail access, 580 with this proposed interchange. And then they would also like to close access to 590th Avenue. So again, orientated east to the existing orientation of 580th Avenue. They're showing these proposed frontage roads on the north side and the south side, as well as the on and off ramps. The red represents a proposed bridge. So this is the two together. Again, the previous one, the interchange was west of 580th Avenue. The preferred interchange is east of 580th Avenue. Which brings us to the talking points. The first point was that, you know, most of the accidents, issues that the DOT communicated were on the western end of Highway 30, east of the cloverleaf of I-35. We're not sure why they're including 590th with their interchange project. 590th is a little under a mile to the east. With the adding of the local roads, it's going to add cost and time to travel for the two businesses that are located on 590th. The second point is the cost. You know, funding, as the board knows, is limited for local road improvements. We're not sure who they plan to have pay for this or maintain the local roads or the on and off ramps. And then the last thing is really more of a question. With the current orientation at 580th, there's a UP railroad crossing to the north, and with the growth of the industrial expansion area inside the city of Ames, we're not sure what the future holds for that location. If that changes, what will the impact be for this proposed concept and layout?
And run through a quick list of my pros and cons of this new layout. First of all, wherever it lands, it's going to increase or improve safety, and that's the main goal here by the DOT. So, but that's not really specific to which one. Secondly, on a pro, better access to R70 or 580th. Right now, we have about 1,500 vehicles a day traveling north here on R70. Now they can just get off and go right to Nevada. The other proposal, they have to backtrack and come back to get on, similar from northbound as well. So this has better access from R70. Better situation here with the bridge. We have a bridge right here. Under this current proposal, we wouldn't necessarily have to replace that in the next 5 years. If this frontage road isn't here, or if they close this off, we have to replace that bridge before it's done. Otherwise, in the future, when we replace it, these businesses have no access for months, and that would not go over well. The cons, cost and maintenance, as Jerry already mentioned, these frontage roads. I would point out, under our current recently updated 2080 with City of Ames, they do maintain all the way down to Highway 30 on 580th. So I would assume they'd continue to do that with this. And with the DOT being back on this frontage road, I would assume they'd maintain that as they came in and out. That would leave this stretch, which we don't necessarily feel is necessary at this time, and this frontage road down here, that the DOT actually maintains the end of that. So I don't know who would end up with the maintenance on that, but that'd be a con. The long frontage road may increase traffic on 566th Avenue. That's not quite shown here, but that's the church road. They have a private road that
goes
back
there. That's the road you were concerned about earlier, Morris, mm-hmm. that we had motor grader coming after?
Correct. Yeah.
This long frontage road might discourage people from coming all the way down here and coming to backtrack to the church so they could use Lincoln Way on our gravel road, which Ames now has a half mile of that, but we maintain the entire gravel road stretch. 590th closure is a con. We've talked about that already. We don't necessarily feel that's necessary at this time until more development happens to the east. And Brecky's and Caramoli will be on a dead end, which they didn't necessarily like, but it is shortened here. The other proposal is considerably longer dead end road to get down to Brecky's feed store. Mm-hmm. Those are my main comments. I did print out some traffic counts for the past 5 years, or accident data. and I have traffic counts as well on our roads, but if you're interested in any of that information for the past 5 years, I can give you that. Mm-hmm. Right now, the accident count is similar at 580th at S14 here in Nevada. Before, Nevada was much higher in the past, and now these are catching up. This has 17 accidents in 5 years, same 17 at S14.
How many of those serious?
Yes. Well, let's start with Sandhill Trail. That had 14 accidents, one minor injury. 580th had 17 accidents, five minor injuries. The concern, there was a lot of broadsides. There was eight broadside accidents. 590th had just four accidents. Two were just a single vehicle, and then another one was animal related. So the other two were somewhat serious, had a major injury.
That's the one where the car flipped and went down into the ditch.
I am not familiar with what happened there.
Right there at the Jensen's property, so the bridge just to the east of there.
Okay.
Actually had to lifelight somebody out of there. Went down into the dredge ditch.
I did check the previous 5 years at 592, and it was very similar. Four accidents, and there was one major accident, so it hasn't changed that much in the 5 years. 600th had six accidents, one possible injury, but they're all fairly minor. And Airport Road, seven accidents, one major injury. And then S14, 17 accidents, one major injury, and also a lot of broadsides there as well.
So in our brief conversation, Loris, with Jerry and Darren and Deb, I expressed what my concerns were with this, and they are adequately reflected in this document that you guys produced. I don't come down with my friend Nancy Miller that this is not strong enough. I think it's exactly strong enough. Understanding that the Board of Supervisors represents 98,000 people in Story County, not just the people in this corridor, and I believe the reality is that it is time for a controlled access point at 580. I just tend to disagree that we need to close 590th at this point or do any of that. The other one that I'm really concerned about is who's expected to fund and maintain the frontage and rearage roads. And so, like I say, that's my concerns are adequately reflected in here. Loris, this is your first chance to really dig into this thing. I've got a couple grammatical changes that I'd like us to make. Do you have anything substantive that you'd like us to talk about?
No, the letter reflects my concerns from the directed toward what they're seeking input on right now. I did go to the hearing or the meeting and the presentation, whatever. Nancy, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I thought I'd refrain from that. Okay. So, I respect, because they did a good job. The engineer that was there that I spoke with did a good job of explaining things to me. So, I understood what was happening,
uh-huh,
which was good. So I share the same concerns, and then I'm just thinking about the time frame of this. Because based on the announcement a few weeks ago by Alliant Energy having formed, kind of been able to lock in big blocks of acreage up in that area to possibly move forward with some projects, industrial type projects, that the road construction could be going on at the same time that there's construction north of there for, I'm just thinking about Lincoln Highway. Okay, how this could be a mess, how we could end up having damage to existing cave roads, how, there are costs involved beyond this. But I know we can't do anything about the time period about that. I think Nancy's suggestion about talking to the commissioners, at least to express our concerns also about potential dual construction projects or multiple going on, isn't true. But back to the letter itself, I think it does address the county's concerns.
Okay, so then let's work through it this way. Let's start with the existing letter. Let's make our edits to the existing letter. Then let's talk about if there's anything
missing that we'd like to reword? I'd like to hear from the public. Nancy, you again, if you want to talk to us again about your position on this, and we'll go from there. So the first thing is December, it should be today. So instead of December 19th, December 13th, it should be December 19th. Second one I have is in item number one, next to last line, it's Highway 30 East, not Highway 3 East. Then the next one I have is in item number two, and instead of the word rare, first word of the second line, I would use the word limited. Our funding is extremely limited, if not extremely rare. Those are the changes that I have. Morris, do you have others than that?
Yes, down in the last paragraph, where it says Board of Supervisors, could we move the apostrophe behind the S instead of in front of the S?
Sure.
That was the only other one that I
tried. Perfect. Outstanding.
And
so let's do this. Let's go ahead, Laura, since these are the Board of Supervisors' concerns, let's make sure that we formalize those. So the first item is it our position that we are concerned about the cost for a limited item number one? We're concerned about previous discussions where it was talked about between, informally talked about between DOT and the county, that 590th, any future closure of 590th would be part of the entire project, not just the western portion of the project. You agree with that?
I do agree with that.
Okay. Second one is available funding, the fact that we have limited resources in order to do these things, and any portion of the $13 million of this project to the county would be problematic for the other items that we have to deal with.
I agree with that.
And then finally, proposed interchange because of the railroad crossings. I don't think this has a lot to do with the design proposal here. I think that gets to the question that you just brought up of we don't know exactly what Prairie View Industrial Park is going to look like. I do believe that with rail access to the main line of the UP, it's a reasonable expectation that we're going to see more tracks crossing 580th in the future. Laura, you come that way to work every day. Imagine instead of two tracks, if you had four or six tracks there, the problems that would cause. And if that's the if that's the reality, then would DOT have the same plan? Because I believe that that's going to be the reality down the road.
Yeah, and I agree. Exactly. I think thank you for the four of you getting together and discussing this and laying it out. I think this is a very clear position of concern.
Okay, and do you think it's the appropriate position for the county to be taking? Because it's very clearly not, we're not taking a position for or against. We're asking questions.
Right.
We're raising concerns about 590th.
Correct.
But there is nothing in here that should be read as the Board of Supervisors is absolutely for this project or absolutely against this project.
These are our questionable areas. These are areas of concern to us. I agree with that.
Okay, good. Nancy doesn't agree with that. Nancy thinks we should be against it. I don't know. You spoke to it pretty well early in the meeting. I don't know if you want to speak to it again. I don't know if there's anybody else who would like to speak to it. If you want to speak, come up so we can make sure we get it recorded. And Nancy, I so appreciate that you're here today as a resident of the area. And I hope you understand my position of why I come down where I come down.
Thank you. Okay. The last time this situation came up, I'm talking about the whole corridor thing. Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
That work?
Yep.
All right. Yeah, I was just complaining about it. The last time this was a big deal, the supervisors did write a letter. I don't remember exactly the tone of that letter. Do you?
I think I remember the tone of the letter. I'm going to look to Darren. That tone of the letter was highly concerned about the disruption along the corridor, highly concerned about 600th, which we had in the plans to pave and have in fact paved, highly concerned about 590th and what that would do to Case IH. And now remember, the last time you had the 580th interchange moved way to the west. What, it was a good quarter mile to the west of where it is now. And there was no good access to 590th. And so I think it was a stronger, my representation would be it was a stronger letter against the proposed project. But, Darren, we didn't come out dead set against the project. We just were
laid
really
out some concerns.
A basic thought I've had is they have been heck-bent on doing this project for a number of years. So perhaps we need to get a clarification from them is why? Why? And why are we focused on going east through Nevada and all that stuff? Why aren't we focusing on west? Mm-hmm. I mean, Boone's got this stoplight, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, 17 accidents in 5 years? Mm-hmm. Is that what you said? And they're pretty well spread out across the intersections? But when is the last, do you happen to know, when is the last time there was an accident on 580th? Because with that turning lane, that's fabulous. And with, you know, you can come across into the median. I've never seen an accident there.
I don't have anything now other than 17 in the past 5 years, including 17.
Yeah, and I saw an almost accident there yesterday. So Nancy, where I come down on 580th is, it is only 17 today over the last 5 years, but it's growing, right? We're seeing so S14 was higher than 580th back a few years ago, and we're seeing both the traffic counts and the issues that happen at 580th grow. So I happen, and I'm talking personally now, I'm not talking for the Board of Supervisors in any way, shape, or form, I agree that something needs to be done at 580th because as we look out to the future, we're going to have some real issues there, especially as we talk about the industrial area growing and what that's going to add to it. So I happen to completely agree with that. I'm concerned, absolutely. I get more concerned as we move east of 580th and what it looks like, but I agree with the 580th. So finding a way to split the difference there and figure out how all that works. The other thing I'll say about this current plan from the DOT, so this severely limits the people that are down there off Sand Hill Trail. We've got multiple businesses in there right at the intersection of I-35 and US 30 on the south side of the road. And it severely limits them. It also more limits the two churches on the north side, and it limits DOT. But I think there is a great justification for that, just the way everything lines up. I don't find the same justification for closing 590th at this point. I definitely am going to be opposed to closing 600th or doing anything with 600th in the near future because we just spent, Darren, $1.2 million?
On 600? Closer to 900.
Okay, 900,000 there. That's going to be hard for me, especially until we get figured out. S14 to me here in Nevada is one we better get figured out. But I tend to come down on the side we need to do something at 580. Right.
Yeah. We've had some concerning accidents there in the past couple of years. We had the video of the school bus getting hit.
At 580?
Yeah.
And it's just getting worse. It's not getting better at 580.
I won't go that way in the morning or at night, you know, as I'm coming home. You know, I go up 580th, but I would not go Lincoln Way to 580th and turn north across the line of traffic, you know, try to head north there at 580th right now to get to Ames. That's either the North Ames, so I'm avoiding the downtown area. And I won't do it during the peak drive time.
Yeah. Well, we know, you know, even going up to Lincoln Way to go into Nevada, you know which times of the day are going to be really, really hectic. You know, so, but you know what, you just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, another thought I had, now I'm not minimizing the fact that we've had 17 accidents, okay? First, in my mind, and any accident is one too many.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. At the same time, what caused these accidents? Did we have impaired drivers in one form or another? What was the cause? Okay? Doing these closures and all that, if somebody's driving drunk, doesn't make any difference. So I think that looking at the cause and it would be also a consideration for closing the rest of these roads. Okay? I do think that we need a turning lane there at 600th coming from the east.
Coming from the east. So out of Nevada towards 600th, you'd like to see a turning lane more like what we have on 580.
Correct.
And I think DOT would like to see that as well. Is that right, Darren?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not going to take up too much space. Well, I think we already own the land. I think the DOT or whoever already loans the land at McConnell's that would facilitate a turning lane.
It'd be a tight fit. I don't know if we haven't quite enough. We'd have to look into that.
But that's the only place that I've seen some issues now that, you know, now that the page is Darren Good Road and everybody likes it. And
best road in Story County, Nancy.
Does everybody understand why it's the best road?
Well, I say it whenever I can. You want to tell everybody?
Yeah, but see, it's the best road because when they were doing that, they were also, Manassas was also doing the intersection there at I-35. Well, Manassas did not want to change their formula for pavement, and so we got the tougher stuff.
Yeah, better grade concrete than we normally get on our roads.
That's why they say that it's the best road. But and also, These estimations of what the traffic's going to be 2040, how did they come up with that? Is that out of the air?
Darren, can you speak to that?
I can't speak to the formulas they use, but they run it through a pretty sophisticated formula to come up with those numbers. I can't speak to what it is, but DOT would have to answer that.
Do you believe the traffic count they put there for 2015? Do you believe it? Or do you think it's inflated?
2015, they have 1,500 or 15,000 vehicles.
A day?
Correct. And that's what's shown on the traffic count map as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those are manually, well.
So I would tend to, so the fact that Story County has 6,000 more people a day coming to Story County than leaving Story County actually makes me start to believe that number, that we have that many people moving around in Story County that we could see. I mean,
okay.
If you're moving in Story County, you're hitting that intersection at some point.
Yeah. So the interstate just north of 13th is only 30,000, so we're half of the interstate traffic.
So. Yeah. All right, so Nancy, I'm going to ask you so we can get to the end of this letter.
Yeah.
You've heard us talk through this letter. You've heard our rationale. Is there anything you want to encourage us before we take action on this letter?
No, the letter, take action on the letter.
Okay.
It's fine.
Good.
I still would encourage you to get involved with the commissioners in this whole project.
Absolutely.
Because I think that there's some questions that need to be answered. One is, why are we so focused on going east from I-35, that project,
mm-hmm.
fulfilling that project, as opposed to what are we going to do over here? What's the time frame?
And you're talking about Boone.
Yeah, going to Boone and on.
Right.
Okay. If we're planning Interstate 30, okay, which we all know that that's the goal. Okay. Then we need to know. Okay. This is what you're doing here and why. Now, I'm just going to lay it out there. I have heard numerous times that this is a pet project based upon family accidents.
I don't know what that means.
No, I'm not going to spell it out.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
So, you know, I think that the commissioners need to be involved in this heavier than what they have been. Now, they only meet, is it quarterly?
I couldn't tell you for sure.
I think it's quarterly, and I have not reviewed the commissioners' minutes for the last couple of years, which I had done before that. So I don't know if this subject has been broached in any of those meetings, but I think it is a good idea to stay in contact with the decision makers.
Yeah. So I agree with that, and this is the start of that. And my understanding is we're at the beginning of this process, not the middle of this process. It's not on their 5-year calendar. It hasn't been brought up to be part of their 5-year calendar yet. But I think that our meeting over at the church the other night was the beginning of trying to get it on the five-year calendar. And the number I'm hearing is like 2023 that they're looking at for something.
It was on their five-year calendar not that many years ago.
Right.
But then they took
the whole thing off, right?
Because of funding, I believe.
Because of a nice lady named Nancy Miller is what I think it was because of. All right. Thank you, Nancy. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak to this before the board takes action? Cindy, do you want to speak?
Yeah, I'll make it short.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, sir. You don't have to make it short.
Well, thank you, and I don't have...
Start by introducing yourself, Cindy.
Okay. I'm Cindy Hildebrand, and I live at 57439 250th Street, and my land is visible there on the lower left part of the map. I have been following this project very carefully because our land is so close to it and because we live so close to it. And I'm really enthralled by what I'm learning today because at the meetings I attended, we were told by at least some DOT staffers that the first design you saw and this design you're seeing now were co-equals, that there was never a preferred option. So obviously I missed the point at which the other one became preferred. I prefer this one, and so do some others I've talked to. Frankly, I think we would be happy if we could be the same as we were, but it's pretty clear that's not an option. So between the two designs, this is definitely better for me and the people I've talked to. And as for the concerns expressed in the supervisor's letter, I agree with what I understand of them. Is there any, if I could ask a question, is there... a way that the concerns up to the north could be alleviated by a different design? Because I have the feeling that this design might be just, I mean, that there might not be another alternative that would be better. Is that?
Yeah, so I think you're right, Cindy. I don't think that what happens to the north, we're talking about the UP railroad tracks, right? I don't think that what happens to the north is going to have a direct impact on traffic on Highway 30, but it should be part of the conversation of, is this the best design with the idea that someday you won't be able to go all the way through to Hullums going north on 580, and then what happens then? I just think it's an important question to ask. I don't know that I have a great answer, because I don't think that's going to impact what's happening in Highway 30 and 580.
Thank you, because when I read the draft of the letter yesterday, I thought I understand the concerns, but I'm not quite, I didn't quite understand more specifically how a different or the same design can solve them. Anyway, thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Appreciate the time.
Yep. Okay. Loris, if there's nothing else, I take a motion to approve the letter as amended.
I would make that motion.
And I'll second it. So discussion.
None. Right.
So if this passes, what will happen, Jerry, you'll make the corrections. You'll get it up to me. I'll sign it today so that we can get it off and submit it in the time required. Further conversation?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Sanders, aye. It passes as revised. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Deb. Next is discussion and consideration of FY19 asset request and proposed funding recommendations. And coincidentally, it's Deb Shildroff.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's that time of year, isn't it?
It's that time of year, and I gave you an extra handout. I've got more available for anybody in the audience if you'd like to see that. It just shows what the Story County Asset Funding has been going back to fiscal year 12 through the current year. But before we go there, I kind of wanted to go through just a few of the lines on the documentation that was part of the agenda, and those are the asset requests. And just a reminder, the county uses three funding sources in the asset process. These general funds, local option sales tax funds, and then public health dollars, which is essentially a grant that we get through the state. And the public health dollars are specific to public health services. So Mary Greeley Medical Center's public health services gets those dollars. We have 32 agencies in the asset process for fiscal year 19, and that includes one new agency this year called All Aboard for Kids. There are 21 of those agencies requesting funds from Story County. There are 112 services funded in the asset process, and 61 of those services currently receive Story County funding. So just some numbers for you to think about. In fiscal year 18, there was approximately $4.2 million allocated to all of those services from all of the funders. So, you know, it's a substantial amount going into just the human service organizations. So if you want to pull out the document that has all of the requests, I just have a few lines to go through to clarify, and then if there's questions you have, we'll address those as well. Line 16, the Ames Community Preschool Center, that's about a $56,000 increase asked to the county. The reason behind that is they're working on creating more competitive wages with their teachers and their staff. They're not adding any additional staff, but they are bumping up their wages.
$5,600, not $1,000.
I'm sorry, yes, okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
No,
sorry.
Okay, just for anybody listening to audio. Okay, thank you.
Line 18 is the new agency, All Aboard for Kids. They're a very small nonprofit started by a family who has 5 autistic children. And so they are focusing on a summer program for those kids. And it doubled in size this last summer. So the word is getting out about the summer program. And so they have applied to be an asset agency, and they're requesting funds. You may ask, well, why is the county being requested funds when we're not funding or cannot fund mental health or disability services? That goes to the region. They do provide summer programming to non-disabled children. And so that's what the county funding is being requested for, is scholarships for the non-disabled children that participate. Line 22, Boys and Girls Club, their totals. That's another larger increase asked of the county. They're looking at site expansion for elementary-aged kids, and they're projecting to add 6.25 FTEs. As a result of that expansion, they're serving 170 kids, and last year they turned away about 24 children just because they were maxed on their space.
Was that, is the site expansion and therefore the staff expansion going to be in the Nevada site or the Ames or both?
Primarily the Ames site. It's at Harvest Vineyard Church, which is right off of Highway 30. They are looking at some expansion to Nevada, but they haven't found an alternative site yet.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Line 37, Emergency Residence Project. In their transitional housing, they are looking at that model of housing services to individuals going forward. They're the only provider offering transitional living services to the general population. YSS has a transitional living service, as does Access, but they're very population specific. And in addition to this transitional living service, there's an enhanced case management component that's been added to help individuals and families work through challenges that they face with finding long-term housing. And the families and individuals meet with the caseworker every week to make sure their plan is sustainable and they're getting the assistance that they need to move into longer-term housing.
On the emergency residence project, I mean, the request obviously has gone from 3,000 to 25,000 or $22,000 difference. So that's a huge jump. Okay. Is this, and I know you haven't had the hearings yet, I've got them on my calendar at least to try to make some of them, but, you know, are they also looking at maybe what the Story County Housing Trust Fund might be able to do for them long term? Is it a discussion that this might be a short term fix?
I am not aware that it's a short-term fix, but you're bringing up an excellent point, Loris, in that we do need to, probably sometime sooner rather than later, to get the Story County Housing Trust Board and the organizations that are involved with housing together to start kind of figuring out who's going to be doing what and how that all can be coordinated together. I don't know that if there's a whole lot that can be done for fiscal year 19, but at least going into fiscal year 20, which means we probably need to be talking like between now and August.
Always, always one of the things that has frustrated me, and ACID is such a good system overall, but the agencies having to ask for funds 18 months in advance, and then, to use them, that's always a difficult situation for them, so I understand. So thanks for that. So.
Yeah. And I think, too, keep in mind that Emergency Residence Project is part of a kind of a regional group now, Two Rivers, and that involves a couple of other counties in terms of addressing homelessness services within that particular region. So, yeah, we need to have these housing conversations so we can understand each other's roles and how we can complement one another.
Yep.
Okay. Line 47 under Heartland Senior Services, that's their service coordination and outreach. You'll see they're asking for less in fiscal year 19. The reason that there's that bump in fiscal year 18, if you remember, they came and asked for fiscal year 17 funds to be rolled over into fiscal year 18 because they had changed their unit of service costs. Mm-hmm. And so they're drawing down the funds this current year, but that was just to get them aligned with what their actual costs were in order to draw those funds down. So that is a decrease, but that is a decrease in their asking. So they've initiated that.
Mm-hmm.
Line 66, Mica Dental Clinic. They are asking for an increase from all of their funders. Just to keep in mind, the county did approve a one-time allocation to them in fiscal year 16 in the amount of $35,000 to help keep them afloat. There were other funders involved with that. United Way, Mary Greeley, Iowa State provided them, I think, with about $10,000, and the City of Ames also provided dollars. So, again, this is a service that's primarily funded through Medicaid for MICA. They said the good thing was that the tiered service structure that Medicaid had in place has been removed, so that offers up all services to all clients. It used to be that they had to come in and get service A and before they could access service B and C, even though they might need B or C before they need A. So it's the accessibility has improved and is much more user-friendly for their clients, but reimbursement rates have been decreased.
And my understanding is now the dental clinic feels like it's on a sustainable path, or MICA feels like the dental clinic's on a sustainable path.
Yes. Yep, that's what they shared with us. They had a kind of a sustainability plan that they had put into place, and with keeping that full-time dentist on staff has made a big difference because people are now calling the dental clinic their dental home, so they're returning for all of their dental work, not just the emergency high-cost kind of work, but checkups and those kinds of things. So that was an increase there. They also asked for an increase in the food pantry. They have not asked for an increase in the food pantry from the county in probably the last 2 to 3 years. So I'm not all that alarmed at that increase there.
I'll just throw out a piece of information. When I went to the last quarterly hunger collaboration meeting at United Way, and the discussion was about that the use was up in all of the county's 18 pantries, and why, a little bit about why Story County has an issue among the food pantries going forward. There's plenty of food being donated,
and access to food, but they're still trying to figure out how to get it out to people. So there's still a gap there. And in the future, maybe we need to look at having a staff member in community services or Deb or someone maybe attend the hunger collaborations just to kind of keep on top of that.
Well, and isn't it interesting that we're noticing an uptick in the use of our food pantries, but yet DHS just reported to us there's a decrease in the use of food assistance?
One thing that also came up at that meeting was that because as of October 1, with the new federal year, the food stamp amounts had gone down per person, so that people who were barely making it now, then, we're getting another reduction as of October 1. And with that. So that was one of the causes cited as why use was up. So.
No, good information. Line 74, raising readers, total significant increases. What they've noted in their budget is that they are working on doing more outreach, and this is an addition of FTEs to expand programs in Nevada and Colo school districts and to add programs in Ballard and or Roland Story school districts. So that's what they've noted there.
And they've got tremendous new office space.
They do, yes. It's working out well.
With a great tenant. With a great landlord.
Line 106, under Youth and Shelter Services, their summer enrichment program. If you recall, this was started out as a pilot program last summer in the Collins-Maxwell School District, and the county assisted with paying for the meals for that program. So now they're just adding that program into their summer enrichment overall programming. And since Collins-Maxwell is out in the county, we're seeing the lion's share of their requests to Story County. And in line 107, our asset admin expenses. So what's included in there is payment for Aaron Thompson to serve as our asset administrative assistant. There's about $600 for just general expenses like postage and printing and that kind of thing. And then we're in the first year of the Clear Impact Scorecard, which we're a part of. And that's an annual ongoing expense. So that's what's increasing the request going forward.
And just if someone were following this later, it's actually line 110 for ACID. For our ACID.
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay. Just if someone were following it.
Yep. Thank you.
Sure.
So then we've got local option, which there were minimal increases there. About a 10% increase overall in local option, a 15.5% increase in requests in general basic, and in public health, about a 4.5% increase. So I will open that up for questions or comments.
You always do such a good job of being able to tell the board where the increases are, not just the numbers, but why they're happening. And thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, thanks.
So thank you, Deb. I agree with Morris. You not only do an outstanding job here, you do an outstanding job in everything you touch. My questions are, while there's multiple partners in the asset process, there's really three major partners that try to pull all this together: United Way, City of Ames, and us. Tell us, so United Way and Ames have both had their asset meeting. What kind of increase were they able to realize?
Yep. The United Way board passed a 5% increase, and the in-city council addressed this last week, and they also approved a 5% increase.
And the requests that are before us now in general fund is a 15.6% increase, which I don't believe is sustainable for the county. And I need to point this out, too, because, Deb, you and I have been talking about this for a lot of years. You know that when I came on the board,
Well, when I came on the board, asset funding from the county had been fairly stagnant for multiple years, and it was a priority of mine that we do more, that we become more of a true partner with Ames and UNITE Way. And in fact, over the last 6 years, we've increased by 70% what we put into the asset process. So I hope that nobody takes this as I'm trying to shortchange anything, because we, in fact, we have a 70% increase over 5 years. But I believe more like the 5% increase in general fund dollars is more appropriate and more sustainable. I do want to pull one thing out, however. I want to pull the administrative. So line 110 that Laura's noted, the asset administrative services, which is currently $4,000 and going up to $6,550. My suggestion would be that we would put that $2,550 in the budget. And increase the rest of the budget by 5%. I don't want any of our 5% to go and increase administrative costs. I want us just to put that in. So what I'm suggesting, Morris, is that we go to $781,776, which is a 5% increase plus the $2,500.
So 5% is just for services.
5% in services. So, and then we agree to the additional $2,500 in administrative costs. And I'll say this: that will take us from FY12 to FY19. That's an 82.4% increase in funding to asset. What the county has stepped up in a big way.
That's why we have the graph, just to show, yeah, we've been trying to maintain an increase. When there's little to no funding or flat funding, it does make it difficult. We understand there are years that may have to happen, but it's, I think, it just highlights the partnership that the county has in this process and the... seeing the necessity of all the services that go through the asset process.
As we did this at the beginning of the year, okay, I would like to give more, but I also recognize the realities of what the budget situation, we have such an uncertainty in some areas, and we're making a commitment now. Looking at everything, yeah, I'm comfortable with the 5 plus the $2,550 for the asset administrative services. I asked about the ERP transitional earlier because I believe the need is out there right now, and possibly this might be something that I know occasionally we get special requests from agencies later in the year, and I would encourage that or ERP moves forward to maybe look and see how we are after, you know, when we're halfway through the fiscal year 19 on that, because I know that that's important. So I will make the motion, okay, to approve $781,776, which, if your math is correct, works out to a 5% increase on everything except the asset administrative services, because we're going to add an extra $2,550 on top of that for the asset admin services.
Yeah, and just to be clear, where I got to the 781.76 is I took the whole amount, had multiplied it by 5%. And then I added $2,550 onto it.
Oh, okay. So that does exist. All right. Then for a total, then I'd like to amend my motion, please. For a total of $781,776, which should include a 5% overall from what we did for fiscal year 18, plus $2,550 for the administrative asset additional fees.
And I'll second that. Discussion. Lisa, are you hearing anything that concerns you in any of this as we get ready to go through the budget talks?
Okay. Thanks for a number to plug in. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And Deb, do you feel like, from putting on your asset hat, that this is a reasonable position for the Board of Supervisors to take as asset goes and goes about its work of figuring out what we fund?
I believe it. I believe it does. And, you know, when agencies are putting their budgets together and making their requests, I mean, they try to give us a heads up on why some of them are more significant than others, but they know a lot of the time that to be fully funded at those really high increases is not necessarily going to be likely, but that we try to make every effort that we can.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, so we're gonna act on that first, and we're going to go to local option. Loris, any further discussion on the general funds in that? Okay. In that case, your vote.
Aye.
Aye. And Sanders, aye. So it passes at the 5% plus the 25.50. Now, local option, for years and years and years, Story County had stood pat at $15,000. We increased that last year. And then again, well, we increased it 2 years ago, and we increased it again last year. I think we got to do something similar. So fortunately for us right now, our local option sales taxes look pretty good, but we buy a lot of things out of our local option sales tax. I'm suggesting that we go to a flat amount of $17,500. The request is $18,315. I'm suggesting just a flat amount to plug into the budget of $17,500.
Lisa, since you're here, could you remind me some of the other items that come out of local option sales tax?
Certainly. One of the things that we, first of all, did when we started taking certain dollars out of, or certain things out of there, is we looked at the things that have to be funded from the rural fund, and then went ahead and are paying them out of local option sales tax. So, so annually, the library funding comes out of the local option sales tax.
Okay.
The City of Ames solid waste disposal that we pay every year comes out of there. The major one. The soil conservation dollars, which was $7,500, is now $15,000. We have chosen then, the board has chosen then, to also take the motor grader lease out of there, as opposed to, we were purchasing a new motor grader every year, now we take the lease out of there, which helps offset our local effort. We also, depending on the ask and depending on the dollars available, take sheriff's patrol deputies out of there.
Okay. All right.
I will say that one of the things that I've been working on, obviously, with all the budget requests that have been coming in is you know, getting the numbers lined up. And it looks like, from what I can tell so far, from that if I hold it steady from last year and include include the sheriff's vehicle ask all out of the rural, which is your call. You can do whatever you want there. We will have about $73,000 left in the 40%. So that portion is looking good.
Okay.
But that doesn't include increase to the library. It doesn't include increases in
stuff. I realize
no, that's,
that.
That's holding the asset funding steady and the library funding steady. So no, that does not include those two items.
Okay. So Rick has proposed 75. Okay, it's actually been a reduction here from what's requested, but it's still more than we have given for last year. So we still increased it by about, doing my math quickly, $1,000 roughly. Okay, so I find that based upon our tentative situation with some things going on down at the state, that I will move the $17,500 from local option sales taxes as a reasonable compromise.
Okay, and I'll second it. Deb, do you think that's a reasonable spot for us to be in?
I believe it is, yeah. And just a little piece of history. Prior to the 1999 lawsuit with Farm Bureau,
local option sales tax was fully funding all the asset services for the county.
Right.
That was our primary source, and so we had to readjust all of that after that particular lawsuit, and then we slowly brought it back in. And in lost dollars, as you can see, are only used for certain services by certain providers, and when they draw the funds down from the county, they specify that it's serving the unincorporated area. So that's our documentation then, if it's ever questioned.
Super. Thank you. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Yes.
Sanders, aye. Passes. Public health funds, the request there, I mean, so that, full disclosure, that we're basically a pass-through for the public health funds. I think the request that they have there is reasonable. I believe it, and it is what it is.
Yes.
So I would suggest we stick with the request as made.
I move $345,900 from the public health funds.
Yeah, I'll second it. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Our asset funding passes as noted in each of the three areas. Deb and Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that gets us no departmental reports today. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to address topics that were not on today's agenda. We can't take any action, but we might in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on anything? Seeing no one moving the microphone, it is on assignments. Morris.
Okay, the Boost Board, which is the Boone Story County funds that go toward early childhood education and development, met last Thursday, and we have voted to send a letter request to Parenting Way, one of the contractors with the Boost Board, that to request $25,838.21 is what I have on the notes from our admin assistant. I do want to note that in the state auditor's report that was issued on this situation about billing, that it says $27,533.21. So I believe the executive director of Boost is still working out a little bit of the difference between these two, I believe. But we have voted to ask them to pay that money back within 30 days.
And that's based on the belief that there's an erroneous bill or a duplicative bill or something, some kind of drawdown from Boost that was not appropriate.
Correct. It has to do with unable to verify time records for billings in the years of 2015 is where it came from. So to let you know about that, we will see where it goes from there. The Boost, a subcommittee of the board met with the Parenting Way people already, and they said they don't have the money, so we'll be addressing this again at our January meeting to the best of our knowledge. So, but since we are a member of that, board, want to let you know about that, okay? It came up previously that I was not thinking. I did something wrong in logging in on a weekend to the county's internet account rather than using my tethering service, as I had been in the past off of my phone, and that I did on a weekend watch Netflix. It was my Netflix account. So I have received verification back from IT and Alyssa Wignall that there was no additional charge to the county, and I had offered to pay for that. I will be voluntarily making a $25 contribution, which is kind of what my estimate might have been for those 20 gigs of service. So I think it might, I don't know. We pay for a lot of bandwidth. So I will be making a $25 donation to the animal control. That's probably the best place to easily put it in. That would be in addition to anything I'm currently donating, because I do have a foster dog, and my husband and I donate for all of those, that dog's medical expenses. We reimburse. Okay.
Speaking of Newton, how's Newton doing?
Newton is fine now, thank you. Newton is an older deaf bulldog who we kind of think we know what's going on. It has to do with his affinity for rawhide bones. Newton is currently sulking because he's prey. All we've given the last 3 days has been a Nyla bone, but his stomach is fine now, thank you. So he is definitely sulking. And the last thing is that following the conversation that our Supervisor Sanders and I had yesterday, I was concerned that I had, in fact, broken the open meetings law again. So I called down to the Iowa Public Information Board, and I did talk to their director, Margaret Johnson, the executive director. Marty and I did have a conversation that would be deemed as breaking the law. So she said, send me an email on this. I reported it. And I asked about paying a fee, and she said this would not be a fee or a fine situation, and I have the exchange. I have 15 copies. I didn't know how many people would be here today. So anyway, if you would like to get a copy of it to determine what happened and her say what she asked me to do, I reviewed some material online, etc. But you can see that, you know, her evaluation of the situation. So thank you for bringing it to my attention. So I think we moved on, and I'll see that Marty gets a copy of this when he gets back also. Okay? Other than that, I'm going to wish everybody a very happy, happy holiday season.
Thank you, Morris. So I actually have one today because I can't figure out how to get this. I mean, you know, my preference is that I try to get my items before us in as a regular agenda, but this one I can't figure out exactly how to do that, and I think it's important that we have full notice and that the public has full notice. So there's a movement in the state to combine workforce development regions. There's currently 15 regions in the state, and there's been a group formed to reduce that all the way down. The number is between 4 and 6 that they're talking about. So the reality for Story County is we have 1.4% unemployment right now. It's the lowest in the U.S. We're the lowest county in the U.S. Workforce development has never been more important to us than it is right now. Trying to make sure that we have the workforce available for our growing economy, but also that each one of our citizens has an opportunity to truly live the best life they can live professionally. So with the reality, I'm currently chair of the Central Iowa Workforce Investment Board CEO Board, and as we look at the changes statewide, I think Story County's participation with our local workforce development efforts have never been more important. I'm going to be bringing forward a request that we increase our funding of our local workforce development efforts. And I just want to have full disclosure that that's going to be coming to us in the budget work sessions, and my rationale for, or at least the initial stages of my rationale for why. But like I say, that's not something I can figure out how to get in front of us. So I want to bring that to you. Any questions on that?
None.
Okay. With that, if there's nothing else, I take a motion.
Question for Shelley. Shelley, can you review for me the deadlines for agenda items over the next, you know, as we head into the new year?
So tomorrow at 3 p.m., is that right?
I will have to send out the emails, too, because I don't know my calendar.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
I've already sent out about, like, 5 emails.
Yeah. I know.
I'm
and
sure
I,
it's very confusing.
But for January 2nd is a Wednesday deadline. Right? And so the most immediate concern we have is making sure that our organizational meeting for January 2nd, that we have everything in tomorrow in order. That's the 27th. So the 27th is our absolutely. I'm a week ahead.
Okay.
27th is a limited agenda, which means we're just going to have consent. Now, I will tell you now, Loris, that we're putting some board appointments on there with the full understanding that you may wish to pull them to discuss any of them, as we've done in the past.
Right.
That's fine as part of a limited agenda, but our limited agenda will come forward, and it'll just be claims and consent agenda, and then we'll deal with it as we normally deal with it. But for anybody who's interested, next Tuesday should be a really short, concise meeting. And then it's that next Wednesday that we'll have the deadline for our organizational meeting on January 2nd.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I got it right. Okay, thank you very much.
And basically, just move everything forward today.
Okay, and I will move that we adjourn.
And I'll second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
Okay, thank you.